Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To London, to Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics, and there's a deal of that right now. Joe guides me to the Guardian UK edition. The wave of strikes sweeping the country reaches a peak this week, threatening to bring Britain to a standstill as workers across the transport network, NHS, Royal Mail and civil service take industrial action in ongoing rows over pay and conditions. Joe, a very good evening to you. That is a blast from the past. This resembles, from my reading from this side of the Atlantic, a general strike. Do they call it a general strike, or are they avoiding that terminology? And general strikes always favored those who were not exactly Marxist, but is sympathetic to the socialist world. Is that consistent with this wave of strikes called, says The Guardian? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, interestingly enough, people are not talking about a general strike, although the effect can feel very similar. The real phenomenon that is going on and more or less paralyzing the UK at this point is just a patchwork of different overlapping strikes. So I think for almost every day in December, someone has been on strike, but it's a different someone each time. You know, there were a couple of days last week where the teachers or various education unions were on strike. Some days the rail unions are on strike. Other days the postal workers are on strike. A few times various civil servants have been on strike. And, you know, on down the line like that. And I think that the thing that's tying this all together is the sense that although the unions might not be directly coordinating with each other, they do seem to have concluded that they all are in a position where their members are unhappy with the pay offers that are currently on the table. And they think that they sort of now is the right time to try to do something about it. So I wouldn't necessarily say that they are directly coordinating to create some kind of general strike, but I think that they have definitely figured out that if they keep an eye on what the other unions are doing and try to time some of these walkouts, for maximum misery, that they can generally have a big political impact that way.
Is the public sympathetic to this? Because everyone is going through the same tough conditions given the war in Europe and the inflation and the energy picture. So is there hostility on the telly or silence?
It is very difficult to tell. I think that one thing that Americans in particular need to understand is that there is much greater sympathy in Europe, including in the UK, for public employees unions than I think you might find even in the US. And so I think that especially at the beginning of some of this, it wasn't uncommon that you would have the TV news doing man on the street interviews where people were saying, yeah, I mean, this is really messing up my commute, but I'm sympathetic to the train drivers who just want a pay package that will keep up with all of the inflation that we're having in the UK right now. I'm starting to wonder if that sympathy is dissipating a bit. And I haven't seen any opinion polling on this, but one important anecdotal piece of evidence is that the leader of the center-left Labour Party, Keir Starmer, who is currently the opposition leader in Parliament, is trying desperately to keep members of his party's leadership from getting out there and being photographed on the picket lines of some of these strikes. Now, I mean, as you can guess from the party's name, the Labour Party has always been very closely associated with unions, much more so even than the Democratic Party in the U.S. The Labour Party gets substantial amounts of their political donations from unions. But I am wondering if that party's leader, Keir Starmer, is figuring out that the public might not fully support this, and so it would be a political liability if his party comes to be associated too closely with these strikes.
I go to a report from The Guardian, which is generally understood to be sympathetic to the center-left. This is King's College Hospital, reading, it's 8:32 a.m. in the morning, and the emergency department, maximum capacity 60, is packed with 61 patients inside. The oldest is 98, the youngest 30 days old. Later, the pressure will intensify. The number of ED patients, beds, trolleys, chairs, will more than double to 137. Joe, this is a slowdown. This is just NHS being overwhelmed because it's a bad season for pneumonia, RSV, the pandemic still with us. What explains this complete disorder? And the feature in The Guardian is sympathetic to everyone, the patients and the hospital workers.
Well, healthcare is a really interesting story in the UK right now because, of course, all of it is administered by the government via the Socialized National Health Service, or NHS. And the NHS, in the best of times before the pandemic, every year we had a winter crisis where the system would be completely overwhelmed by seasonal flu and other cold weather ailments. And every year, the winter crisis seemed to start a little earlier in the autumn and then end up being a little more crisis-y. And so you would end up with ever longer waiting lists for people to see doctors when they went into the emergency room, and longer waits once people had seen a doctor to actually get a bed if they needed to be admitted to the hospital, and, you know, longer waiting lists and all of that. And then COVID came along and really strained the system something awful, because they ended up delaying a lot of routine treatments for people because they were trying to clear the deck for COVID and running into a lot of problems with staff absence when people were testing positive, even if they were mildly symptomatic or asymptomatic. And so the NHS has never recovered from that. And so now here we are in the first real post-COVID winter that we've had where there aren't going to be any lockdowns or anything of the sort. So you may end up with a bit of a surge in COVID cases, even if they're milder. You've got seasonal flu, you've got RSV. There are some concerns among children for strep A right now, seems to be making the rounds. And then you also have this huge backlog of people needing surgeries like hip replacements or cancer tests or treatments or any of the ordinary things that the NHS struggles with in the best of times. And it is just creating a total meltdown. And then on top of that, you have all of these pay disputes with healthcare workers who have been working very hard over the pandemic period and are working hard to try to clear all of these problems with the NHS, and are concerned that their government set pay rates are not keeping pace with inflation. It is just totally a recipe for disaster for everyone.
I'm looking at a photograph. This is the Times of London. Manchester Piccadilly deserted on the first day of the rail strike. We need to emphasize, Joe, because my time in Britain was limited to Scotland. I moved around a little bit in London. The rail network is vital for transportation, for commercial activity, for shopping, for traveling in the UK, far more than anything we have comparable in the United States. So to see Manchester Piccadilly deserted means people are stuck in their homes. There's no business being done. No sales are happening. Is that what this means?
Yes. I mean, the rail strikes are a major problem because Europe, including the UK, are much more dependent on passenger rail than the US is. And that means a couple of things. I mean, first off, there's this practical problem that if the rail isn't running, you're going to have very large numbers of people struggling to get to work, struggling to get to the shops for their pre-holiday shopping. One of the reasons they'll struggle is that people here tend to get driving licenses later in life, and it's less common to have a driving license in the UK than it is in the US, precisely because so many people get in the habit of relying on public transportation like rail. And then driving isn't necessarily a viable alternative for people because a lot of the cities are not set up for large numbers of drivers. Parking becomes an issue. And then economically, the very high fuel taxes are set at that level specifically to encourage people to take public transport that then is not available in the strike. So there is a substantial cost to people, even just in terms of the gasoline costs, the fuel taxes that they have to pay if they're going to do driving as an alternative to the rail. So these strikes are hugely disruptive, an order of magnitude or a couple orders of magnitude more disruptive to the British economy than, say, an Amtrak strike would be, or even a New Jersey transit strike. I mean, these rail strikes over here are having a much more substantial impact on the economy.
We go to the Telegraph report. Grandfather with broken hip taken to hospital tied to wooden plank after no ambulances were available. Subhead: emergency call handler advised family member to phone the out-of-hours GP and told her to, quote, find a way of getting him there herself. Well, the solution: an Army veteran grandfather was strapped to a wooden plank in order to get to hospital after his family were told there were no ambulances available. This means the ambulance drivers are on strike as well, but it means a complete breakdown in emergency services. What is the expectation of the government to solve this, Joe? We're talking about there's unpredictable natures of tragedy here without ambulances.
Well, yes. I mean, the first off, you have an ambulance strike. And again, this is an example of the phenomenon I was talking about a couple minutes ago with the NHS, where the ambulance services were already very thinly stretched after COVID. And, you know, due to various strains elsewhere in the NHS to do with the availability of GPs for, you know, to see people for ordinary complaints or any of the range of other services that haven't been available, that is pushing more and more people to use ambulances and emergency rooms in a desperate effort to get, you know, what ordinarily might be care that would be handled in a more routine way. So that is triggering very long waits for ambulance services, even if you're having an emergency. And it's hard to say what the government can do over this over the short term. I mean, over the longer term, they're going to need to break the taboo of the NHS and have a conversation about whether there are ways that they can introduce more private sector involvement into the system so that you have market mechanisms that are better able to match the supply of health services to the demand for health services. But unfortunately, for a bunch of historical and political reasons, the UK is still very far away from being able to have a productive conversation like that.
And the government right now, it's negotiating with all of these unions. Is it a pay package that will satisfy, get them back to work? Because you show me a schedule that is into January for these strikes. So money on the table ends this?
Well, so the government negotiates directly with some of these unions, particularly some of the civil service unions where the government directly is the employer. The government is definitely at the table for the NHS strikes because the NHS is essentially a government service. It's a bit cloudier with things like the rail strikes, where nominally it is private companies who are the employer of some of the striking workers. But that's an environment where the government is very involved in setting rail fares and service levels. So the government really probably does belong at the negotiating table in those negotiations. I think that part of the problem here is it's only partly about pay. And the government is resisting the demands for higher pay, partly because that would place huge fiscal demands on the government at a time when they are already struggling mightily to balance the budget, and taxes already are going up even without some of these pay increases. But there's also the separate issue of working rules. And I think that the government had hoped that some of these contract negotiations would be an opportunity to change work rules so that some of these government services would become more more productive. You know, for example, change the way that rostering works for the rail union so that it's easier for the companies to shift scheduling and services between weekdays and weekends to better meet post-pandemic demand. And the unions are really digging their heels in fiercely to resist that. I think the nightmare scenario, both for the government and for the health of the economy overall, is that they end up giving ground on the pay demands without getting anything back in terms of increased productivity. And so that then just puts the taxpayer in the situation of paying a lot more for the same or worse service that they were getting before.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's in a London that is overwhelmed with serial and what appears to be very, very unhelpful strikes by critical workers. We're turning to the continent next because European Union has its own troubles with the war in Ukraine and energy as winter bites. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No